भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्या नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयत् नस्त प्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भागवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 16, entitled Praise of King Prithu by the Professional Reciters, text number 11. Durasado Durvishaha Asano Api Viduravat Naiva Vibhavitum Shakyo Venarani Utito Analaha Durasato Durvishaha Durasadaha Unapproachable. Durvishaha, unbearable. Asanaha, being approached. Api, although. Vidura, but. As if far away. Na, never. Eva, certainly. Abhibhavitum, to be overcome. Shakyaha, able. Vena, King Vena. Arani, the wood that produces fire. Utitaha, being born. Analaha, fire. Translation. King Prithu was born of the dead body of King Vena, as fire is produced from Arani wood. Thus King Prithu will always remain just like fire, and his enemies will not be able to approach him. Indeed, he will be unbearable to his enemies, for although staying very near him, they will never be able to approach him, but will have to remain as if far away. No one will be able to overcome the strength of King Prithu. Responsibly, please repeat. King Prithu was born of the dead body of King Vena. As fire is produced from Arani wood. Thus King Prithu will always remain just like fire, and his enemies will not be able to approach him. Indeed, he will be unbearable to his enemies. For although staying very near him, they will never be able to approach him, but will have to remain as if far away. No one will be able to overcome the strength of King Prithu. Little harmony there. Purport. Arani wood is a kind of fuel used to ignite fire by friction. At the time of performing sacrifices, one can ignite a fire from irony wood. Although born of his dead father, King Prithu would still remain just like fire. Just as fire is not easily approached, King Prithu would be unapproachable by his enemies, even though they would appear to be very near him. Durasato durvishaha asano pi viduravat naiva bivavitum shakyo venaranyutito nalaha. King Prithu was born of the dead body of King Vena as fire is produced from iron wood. Thus King Prithu will always remain just like fire and his enemies will not be able to approach him. Indeed, he will be unbearable to his enemies for although staying very near him, they will never be able to approach him, but will have to remain as if far away. No one will be able to overcome the strength of King Prithu. So, further description of the qualities of King Prithu, who is an incarnation of Krishna and is a model king. He is like unto Lord Ramchandra. Both of them appeared to set an example of a good leader. So King Prithu his birth is remarkable, born from the dead body of his father. Anyway, this is likened here unto fire being produced from ironing wood. This is the wood which actually, Brahmanas use while chanting mantras, and they light the fire by mantra, but they also rub irony wood together, and this irony wood is very susceptible to friction. So that indeed was how the sages produced the body of King Vena. They churned the body of King Vena, rubbing his legs together like ironing wood, and poof, of King Prithu. There was nothing like his spending time in his mother's womb or anything like that. He just poof came. So he's being appropriately welcomed and installed as the king, and his qualities are being described. A king, a kshatriya, of course, he has various qualities, but he has to be courageous. He has to be able to execute the law of dharma and the law of the land without any fear. And even some people may feel that the king has made a mistake, but in fact, it is said that the king does not make any mistakes. Tejiyasam nad doshaya. There's no fault in such powerful personalities. Now we have to look at that philosophically. Just like the whole discussion of the Bhagavad Gita. Some people criticize Lord Krishna for inciting Arjuna to kill. And in fact, Arjuna wanted to retire and meditate. He wanted to refrain from killing. He wanted to be non-violent. And Krishna told him, "You fool, this is not the proper thing to do. Go fight, kill everybody." And so some people say that Krishna has to take one more birth so that he can be purified. Actually, the Jains, they say that. Krishna, they call him a Tirthankar. And he has to take one more birth before he will become God. because he incited Arjuna to fight and kill. But the real point, if you listen to Krishna's message, is that na jayate mriyate vakada chinnayam bhutva bhavitavana bhuyaha jo nitya shasvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Only the body dies. The real self, the soul, is eternal. And the journey of the soul depends upon how the body is engaged in the service of the Lord. Krishna teaches Arjuna in 18 days, or rather in 18 lessons, 18 chapters, that he has to use his ability as a kshatriya to fight. And even if he kills so many people, it's really not the most important issue. In one sense, if one is not ordered by the Lord, one should not kill even an ant. Or, let us say, if it is not one's position. For example, we often say, it's also said in the Upadeshamrita, the very first verse, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, in that verse, that the qualification for a spiritually advanced person is that he does not find fault. He's free from the propensity to find fault. Prabhupada includes this in the translation. So such a person can make disciples all over the world, and he can become a saintly sadhu. But does that mean the temple president's not a saintly person? He has to find fault. It's his business. And Prabhupada said that as a spiritual master, as your spiritual master, it is my duty to find out fault. In the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava, Lord Krishna tells Uddhava that the sadhu is expert at cutting away our faults, finding out the faults and cutting them away. So somebody has to find fault and help us to overcome those faults. Not that everybody in the temple has to go around, Prabhu, I want to help you to advance, and then tell the person about all the faults you think he has. No, there are persons who are authorities to do that. Similarly, somebody has to be strong. Somebody has to uphold the law. This so-called American liberalism is nice, but the end result is that we have no backbone. Let not one innocent person go to jail. Let 1,000 guilty men go free, but let not one innocent person go to jail. Okay, the innocent guy didn't go to jail, but there's 1,000 guilty people making life hell for the rest of us. So the point is that even if the king makes mistakes, and that also is by a relative consideration, nevertheless, we are all under the powerful law of karma. Just like Manduka Muni. He was very upset that he was placed upon the, what do you call it, Janga? Huh? Janga. Changa, Changa. He was placed upon the Changa. Everybody knows what the Changa is? Huh? You know what the Changa is? The Changa is a stake. It's a whole bunch of stakes. Wooden stakes, pointed, they're pointed. And it was a particular type of execution for murderers and dacoits, etc., that they would be hoisted up on the changa. In other words, the stake would be put up their rectum, and they would slide down it. And it wasn't very, it would purge them of their sin. They would suffer quite a bit. So Manduka, he met with that destiny, and he was very upset because he was a Muni. He was meditating in his cave. How, and all his life he was saintly. So he got angry and he went to Yama and said, how this happened? And Yama said, well, it's your karma. When you were a child, you took a blade of grass and you killed an ant. So that was too much for Manduka. He cursed Yama to become a Sudra, and he did become a Sudra, but he became Mahatma Sudra Vidura. It's a Sudra, but of the superior kind. But anyway, the point is that whatever is happening to us, the person who is the agent of that particular incident or whatever has his own separate karma. People blame the king, or they blame the police, or they blame anybody they can. They blame the temple president, they blame the authorities for wrongly doing something. But we should understand that whatever happens to us, the major portion of the responsibility is because of our purva karma. Because Krishna, either we are getting the reaction to our karma and it's not the fault of the agent, or Krishna himself, if it's not karma, then it's Krishna trying to teach us a lesson. Externally, it looks like he did it to me, or I did it to her, or whatever. That looks like that way, but actually it has more to do with my individual situation. So similarly, the king, he has to have that confidence, and he has to be given that benefit that he can do no wrong. He has to have that confidence. Otherwise, if he hesitates too much in the execution of the law, if he's always worried, let 1,000 men go, guilty men go free, but let not me make a false judgment against one innocent man. If he's thinking like that, then he'll never take any decisions. And then there's always an appeal to the higher court, an appeal to the Supreme Court, an appeal to this one and that one. It becomes ludicrous. You have murderers who are obviously murderers, and this in the 80s and the 70s, you found this at its height. In the 90s now, people are starting to revile the whole thing. But in the 70s and 80s, you found people who walked in, you know, pulled a gun to someone's head, shot them point blank. There were 10 witnesses, but his lawyer got him off on a technicality after 3 appeals, and he was out on the street again. Ridiculous. So there has to be someone, just like the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Nobody could deal with Vishikashena. He was the incarnation of Vishnu. He advertised himself as an incarnation of Vishnu, and he had some siddhis. Sparks would come from his hair, and I think fire from his mouth or something. He had some siddhis, and everybody was afraid of him. And he was attracting young girls and polluting them in the name of being Vishnu, dancing with them and having illicit connection with them. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was fearless. He hauled him into court and immediately convicted him, cut off his hair, and threw him in jail. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur suffered. He and his whole family were attacked by this tantric. He was actually a tantric. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a very high fever, his whole family, but he didn't care because he was powerful. He had qualities, good qualities of a leader. And that man died. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. So the king, he has to deal in that way, and he is like fire. Nobody can challenge him. And even though he has enemies, we should understand that if one wants to change the world, if one tries to do something in an aggressive way to change the world, you will definitely have enemies, despite the best of intentions. Even Srila Prabhupada, so saintly and so careful a person, he was so tactful, so intelligent, so saintly, no motive. See, someone did that. I don't know who did that. He had something against me. Prabhupada still had enemies, people who tried to stop him, people who wanted to. The cultists, the anti-cultists, they used to read Prabhupada's books just to find things against him. So this will happen naturally. If you try to do anything good in this world, you will meet people who will be against you. And if you are constantly worrying about whether you should do anything because it might upset some people, you'll get nothing done. You simply have to know, you have to have an honest heart. You have to be very straightforward in your dealings and do things for the right reason. Actually, Krishna gives the best advice. He says, "Ye yatha mam prapadyante tangstha taiva bhajami aham." I reciprocate with you according to the way you approach me. So we can reciprocate with people according to the way that they approach us. Prabhupada said in business, if someone tries to cheat you, you cheat him back. So in general, we should give everyone the benefit of the doubt. We should deal honestly, straightforwardly, non-duplicitously. But if someone approaches us and is duplicitous or is Machiavellian, uses so many deceptive techniques to try to get advantage, then we have to respond in kind. So King Prithu here, he took the right approach. He was the king, and he did not give any quarter to his enemies. And his enemies were well acquainted with his prowess, and therefore they, even those who were close by him in the court, even those who were envious of him, they were neutralized. They could not act, because it takes such cowardly men. They have to have a certain environment. People who do not declare themselves as enemies, but rather act as enemies. They're like the fifth column. You know, that's an expression. They're like dissenters from within, who don't declare themselves but act in a devious way to bring down the fall of the leader. They can't just stand up and challenge him. They may be right close by, and they may be your worst enemy. So King Prithu was so strong that even such types of persons could not get a foothold, could not challenge his authority. And therefore he was able to achieve great benefit for everyone. The bottom line is here that by King Prithu's being strong, everyone in the kingdom benefited. And similarly, Lord Ramchandra, everyone in his kingdom was so happy with him. He was very, very strong with persons who were law breakers, with persons who were acting against the interest of the kingdom. He was very heavy. He would execute them, he would banish them, he would do whatever was appropriate without one little tear. Of course he knew that their soul was eternal. Of course he knew that they would get another chance. Of course he knew all these things. If one doesn't know all these things, then one will vote against or make propaganda against capital punishment. Oh, how can we kill these poor people? We will become beasts just like they are. Such and such arguments. But you have to do something to deter sinful activities such as murder, etc. And the only thing is eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You have someone kills, he should be killed. And he gets purged of the sin by that trauma, by the trauma of his being executed on the changa. He's purged his mind. He suffers so much, he's purged of the sin of his own killing. But such, and he has another life. And this is the thing that people don't know, that there is another life. It's not just one opportunity. So these are the advantages of having a God-conscious king. So today is Nirjala Pandava, Nirjala Ekadasi. So in order to make us strong, whoever can do this, it is a good vrata. Srila Prabhupada mentions in New Vrindavan in 1969. So, paravare brahmani dharmato vratai. So one should execute Krishna consciousness, dharmataha, in right path, and vratai. Bhajante mam vrida vrataha. Just like today, ekadasi vrata. Vratai. This ekadasi vrata is required. Just see, here it is that you have performed all the vratas. The purpose of ekadasi vrata is that today we should not eat much usual food grains. The actual prescription is fasting. Nirjala ekadasi. Nirjala means there are many devotees who does not take even water. Water, drinking water, according to Shastra, it is taking food. It is drinking of food or no food. We can take both ways. So sometimes drinking water is excused as upavasa also. But there are many devotees who even do not drink even a drop of water. Whole day and night they fast and observe ekadasi vrata. And the night is called harivasara. Harivasara means the whole night they would chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This is called vrata, dhrida vrata, dhrida vrata. So this is also called Pandava Nirjala. Now, mostly, it's not all the Pandavas, it's mainly Bhima, called Bhima Nirjala Ekadasi, because Bhima's name was Vrikodara, voracious eater. And in fact, of all the Pandavas, Bhima was the one mainly who ate meat. No. It's all right. Meat, sweet meat, any kind of meat. Food is food. You can't be too sentimental. He didn't eat cows. But Vrikodara, you know the story. What was the demon? Hidimba? Was it Hidimba? Huh? Baka. 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 Bakasu. Yeah. Bakasura was attacking this village where the Pandavas were hiding incognito in the house of a Brahmana. So all the villagers made a deal with Bakasura that, don't you attack our village and indiscriminately kill so many people uselessly, you can't eat them all. We will send you one a day. We will choose by lottery. They didn't have lotteries like we have where you win 100 million. They had lottery that you lose your one son. So anyway, it just so happened while the Pandavas were staying at the house of this Brahmana, their number came up. It was their turn to send a representative from their family to be eaten by Bakasura, along with so many other edibles. So they were in great distress and anxiety, and the mother and the father and the son and the daughter, they were all crying, and Kunti Devi overheard them, and she became distressed. We're staying in your house. How can we allow you? My sons will go. One of my sons will go. So it ended up that Bhima would go, and Bhima was supposed to go along with a big cart full of other foodstuffs. And so Bhima got on the cart to go to the cave where Bakasura was staying, and Bhima was supposed to be food for Bakasura, supposed to be killed by Bakasura and become his food. But along the way, Bhima thought, well, if I'm going to meet Bakasura, I'm getting pretty hungry, I might as well eat all this food. So he started eating all the food in the cart. He was driving with his left hand, and he was eating with his right hand, just eating all the food from the cart. So he didn't notice, but he was approaching the cave of Bakasura, and Bakasura came out and saw this Bhima eating the food that was meant for him, and he became very furious, and in a rage he screamed and attacked Bhima. And Bhima was so absorbed in eating. Bhima really liked to take prasad, or really liked to eat, and I can empathize with him. So Bhima, he couldn't stop. He knew actually that he had to fight with Bakasura. He knew that he was a dangerous demon and that he would have to kill him, but somehow he couldn't stop eating. So he just used his left hand to hold off. He grabbed hold of Bakasura and just kind of held him off, and he kept eating until all the food in the cart was finished. Then he turned to Bakasura and fought with him. Of course, he killed him. But the point is that Bhima was such a voracious eater that he could not follow Ekadasi. It was very difficult for him. So, as a concession, it was given to him that he could, I don't remember who gave him the concession, actually, but anyway, it was given to him that he could follow just one Ekadasi a year. Huh?
I think it's Krishna gave
him. Krishna gave him. Well, could be. One Ekadasi a year without any water or grains or anything. And if he could do that, then he would be allowed to break Ekadasis, or at least he would be excused if he broke Ekadasis. Well, we're not going to follow Nirjala Ekadasi with the understanding that for the next 26 Ekadasis, for the next 25 Ekadasis we'll break them. This is if by accident we break Ekadasi, then if we follow this Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi, we will at least neutralize that sin. And here Prabhupada's point, of course, is dhritavrataha, that bhakti is to be performed as a great austerity or vow. Vrata means a vow. So this will help to strengthen our mind and strengthen our resolve. It's not easy to practice Krishna consciousness in this Kali Yuga, and at the present moment in Kali Yuga. Even 500 years ago, it was much easier to practice Krishna. Even 100 years ago, even 50 years ago, it was easier. I remember when I went to school, you've heard it before, the biggest problems they had in schools were kids throwing paper in class, or someone putting a girl's ponytail in the inkwell. You know, that was a big discipline problem. Chewing bubble gum and putting it on the seat, you know, that was, people would do that, and people would sit down on the seat and have bubble gum and get it stuck on your pants or something. These were the major problems in school. If you did this, you'd go to the principal's office and get the strap and be threatened with expulsion. But nowadays, it's like, you just have to listen to Krishna Leela. She'll tell you some interesting Leela from the Brooklyn school system. It's not exactly Krishna Leela. So, it's very difficult to practice Krishna consciousness. In order to practice, we need to be strong. You can't be weak. You have to be strong. So this Ekadasi breath will help you to become strong. Taking cold showers in the morning. How many take cold showers in the morning? Okay, that's good, pretty good. It's good to take cold showers. It makes the mind strong. Right, Chaitanya Babu? Should, okay. Prabhupada said he took cold shower for his whole life up until the time he had his first heart attack. So if someone has heart attacks, they're exempted. But otherwise, it's very good for your mind, fasting, etc. Of course, devotional service is the highest principle, and Prabhupada comments in another discussion with Tamal Krishna Goswami, who was trying to get sanction for these Radha Damodar devotees to go out and distribute books. Prabhupada said, if you have service to do, then you can eat, then you should eat. But if you're going to stay back at the temple, then you should chant 25 rounds and practice Nirjala Ekadasi, which is very good. So, is there any discussion? Yes?
I would like to know why we judge Vidura, who is a great saint, by Janda rather than Dronacharya.
Judge him? Who can judge him? What do you mean by judge?
In the Shastras, refer to as Shudra. We all refer to him as Shudra, but by, that's only by Janda, but by Dronacharya, the Bhagavad, he's definitely beyond one. So why do we still refer to him as Shudra? It's not a philosophy, that's the thing.
Well, he's described as such in the Shastra, but I don't know, it was not a secret. Prabhupada was a Kayastha, which is also a parentship sudra. Kiba vipra kiba nyasi shudra kene noi jay krishna tata veda se guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Brahmana, but he said, I'm not a Brahmana, I'm not a Kshatriya, I'm not a this, I'm not a that. I'm simply a servant of the servant. I don't think we should look down, or even otherwise, even a Sudra is not an inferior position. If one is a Vaishnava, then he's a guru. If he knows the science of Krishna, even he's born in the family of Sudras. It does need to be explained why Vidura was a Dasi Putra. We can't ignore the fact that he was a Dasi Putra. It's not was a fact. He wasn't the son of, he wasn't an heir to the throne. So in one sense, one would say, well, why such an exalted personality as Yama, Yamaraj, one of the Mahajanas in the universe, how did he take birth in, relatively speaking, relative consideration, in a low birth? Well, this is the reason he was cursed by Manduka. Although, as you say, his activities were of the highest order. It's a question of emphasis. We don't emphasize the fact that he was born in a sudra body. We emphasize the fact that he was the greatest teacher of all times. Everything is a question of emphasis. Now, Romaharshan was also born in a sudra family, but he didn't act properly at a certain stage, and therefore he was condemned. His low birth was remembered. If he had offered respect to Balaram, he would have continued to be the guru of all the great sages there. But he didn't. Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
I don't know. It says here that some devotees, the actual prescription is fasting, Nirjala Kadasi. Nirjala means that many devotees who does not take even water drinking. Prabhupada never followed Nirjala Kadasi. But maybe that was to set a standard. Here he's emphasizing the point of becoming strong, practicing a vrata. It definitely is not, I'm not following Nirjali Kadasi today. I know lots who aren't. But for someone who's actively preaching on the streets of New York, it is good sometimes to just pull back a few days and, you know, practice some purificatory austerities which can strengthen your mind. You know, just like, for example, we would do Harinam. We started Harinam in 1969, regular Harinam, going out on the streets daily. And by about 70, 71, Prabhupada used to encourage, you can go out and chant 24 hours a day. And practically we were doing that. We were staying out till 1 o'clock in the morning, getting back and having Mangal Arati at 6:30. And, you know. Then at a certain stage, Prabhupada saw that we were getting weakened. And he told us that, well, Mangal Arati was started, and then gradually Prabhupada told us that we should get up for Mangal Arati. But he also told us that we should be back at the temple by 6 o'clock, that we should leave downtown, and that we should have an evening program every night. Arati, Bhagavad Gita class, Krishna book, etc. And we did that. And then again, a little later, he encouraged, go out all day long. So we need a certain diet of temple activities and preaching activities. But nobody should feel intimidated that they have to practice Nirjala Ekadasi at all. Even 25 rounds is not mandatory. If you're engaged in devotional service and you choose to work in that way, 16 rounds is the minimum. Yes. Yeah, you're the only one putting your hand up.
I was just wondering, if we do follow Vijayakashi, does that wipe out all the accent we had? Or is that also
I've always heard that. I would assume that if... Otherwise, what is the use in calling it Pandava Nirjali Kadasi or Bhima Ekadasi? One naturally assumes that... I definitely know the Prabhupada's never said anything to that effect. You don't find it anywhere, but... unless we are to repudiate everything we've heard from our authorities, I've been led to believe that, and it sounds...